Blog Talk Radio.
Excuse me, yes sir, I understand, but do you actually have the word yes in your vocabulary?
I guess it started when I was a kid. If you said I couldn't do it, I did. Always had a stubborn streak. Put a wall in front of me, and I'll find a way to get around it. There was a friend who said I'd never make the team. A lot of small town talk that said I'd never leave. Oh, and you know who you are. You all played a part in pushing me on to my dream. I wanna thank everyone who ever told me no. Pack it up and get back home. It kept me going, knowing I would prove them wrong. Yeah, I knew it all along. Without them, I'd have given up a long time ago. And so, I wanna thank everyone who ever told me. Behind the desk, he said, sorry, what you got, I just don't get. Oh, but here I am today, standing on this stage, and I wonder even now if he gets it. Yeah, I wanna thank everyone who ever told me no. Pack it up and get back home. It kept me going, knowing I would prove them wrong. Yeah, I knew it all along. Without them, I'd have given up a long time ago. And so, I want to thank everyone who ever told me no. Everyone who ever told me no. Pack it up and get back home, boy. It kept me going, knowing I would prove them wrong. Yeah, I knew it all along. Without them, I'd have given up a long time ago. And so, I wanna thank everyone who ever told me no. Told me no.
We'll get back to you on that, son. Just keep trying. I'm not sure that you actually look like a star.
Saturday night. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and that song is so appropriate for this evening, ladies and gentlemen. I do want to thank everyone that told me no. There have been many people in my life that told me no. No, you weren't good enough. No, you can't do this. No, because you're a woman. No, because you're too short. Let's see. No, because you're not educated enough. and sometimes just plain no. And for all of those people that told me no, well, I thank them because I've done it. I have graduated from college with a 3.50 in my 50s. I became a bounty hunter in my 50s at 4'11", and people saying you're too short and you're too old. I am a best-selling award-winning published indie author after being told I couldn't from teachers years ago. I have my own radio show after people saying, do you really want to? Don't think so. And I also have my own design line and clothing under my married name, Yvonne Sewell. So all of you folks that told me no and said she wasn't good enough, sit back and listen. And for all of my listeners and all of my guests that have been so supportive when we started this show almost a year ago, we are now 665 listeners away from 10,000 listeners just on this show. I do not have a total for the show plus the podcast because one of the podcasts was down today, but I would dare say that we are almost to 22,000 listeners in over 65 countries. So for all of you who told me no, all of you who said it can't be done, thank you from the bottom of my heart, because it is because of my listeners and it is because of my guests that keep coming back that we are successful. It is not because of me. It is because of all of you, and I appreciate it. And that brings me to two sponsors that I have. Author Darren Cox, he wrote a book called Don't Let the Enemy Steal From You, A Crown of Thorns to a Crown of Righteousness. And what Darren says is don't let any man, anything, or let any situation in your life ever steal the things that God has ordained for you to have. One of the great things of my generation that I see, and one of the great things that breaks my heart, is I see a generation that has no idea of the destiny and the future and the hope that God has for our generation. I look at young people in hopelessness. There's so much. We have the cars, we have the entertainment, we have the lights. We have everything the world could offer a generation, and yet there's never been a generation more unhappy, more depressed, and more filled with hopelessness. So, ladies and gentlemen, go and order David's book today. Don't let the enemy steal from you a crown of thorns to a crown of righteousness. And our second sponsor for the show is author Diane Moat. And she has this cute little book that I always tie up my tongue when I'm trying to talk about it because it is just amazing. Pepper Neely Pet Sits Magical Animals in the first of Diane Moat's series, The Supernatural Pet Sitter, The Magic Thief. Someone begins stealing the magic from Pepper's animal friends. She has to find the magic thief before the magic thief finds her. The Supernatural Pet Sitter by Diane Moat is now available on Amazon as an ebook or a paperback. So with summer here and children out of school and vacation time and those long journeys you take when you take them to Disney World or the lake or Six Flags or wherever, Grandma's house, go on Amazon and order The Supernatural Pet Sitter, The Magic Thief, and read it to your children. They will love it. And if you want to be a sponsor on the show, go to advertisecast.com, look up Off the Chain. You will see my rates there. They are not expensive because I do not believe in gouging my sponsors. Let me know what you want, how you want it, and we will run it for 1 month from the day that I get it. Now that we've got all the housekeeping out of the way, I have this amazing new author on the show tonight, and I cannot wait to get into our conversation. She's never been on the show before, but I'm hoping that she will be willing to come back when she releases her new book. We're booked up through the end of December, but I'd like to bring her back in the first quarter of next year. Author Kathy Winfield. She writes under Catherine Winfield. She is the author of the Corsica series mystery novels, which is set on the eastern shore of Maryland. Haverford House, the first in the series, earned 5 stars from Forward Clarion Reviews and was a finalist in the Indie Fab Book of the Year Award. recently released Belle Grove is the second installment and has received as much acclaim as the first book. A seventh-generation Washingtonian, Winfield currently resides on a horse farm on the eastern shore of Maryland, and all of her books are available on Amazon and local bookstores, and no, you cannot go get them now. You have to wait till after the show. So without further ado, I want to welcome Catherine. Thank you for being here and taking an hour out of your Saturday night to visit with me. I so appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoy talking with you.
Now, let's talk a little bit before we talk about the good stuff, that being the books, because Johnny Carson taught me really, really well 100 years ago when he'd have guests on his show. He wouldn't talk about the meat of the matter until he talked about the person, because in this business, we are the brand. Our books are not the brand. We are the brand. So let's talk about Catherine and how Catherine got to where she is today. When you were young and growing up, was writing even on your radar, or was something else on your radar?
Well, I'd have to say stories were on my radar. From the time I was very young, I kind of lived in an imaginary world and had imaginary friends and just made up stories and didn't write the book basically before I could even write, and was kind of living in my own little world. And then once I started writing, loved writing stories. I never pictured me going anywhere with it as becoming an author. It was just something I loved to do, and it was always in the background. And it wasn't until much later that I actually got serious about it.
What brought you to that point about seriously considering sticking your toe in? And ladies and gentlemen, I say this with love because I've been out there for a long time now, and the shark-infested waters of the publishing world.
Yes. It took my first book. It took about 7 years. I wrote a book when I had three children, and I was helping my husband run a business. But I had such a passion for writing, I just had to do it. So I was doing it in any free spare moment, and anybody that has children knows that there's not a whole lot of those. But I did it, and I worked on a book for about 6 years, but then I never did anything with it. It sat. And then several years later down the road, we moved to the eastern shore of Maryland, and that's when I got inspired to do the first book, Haverford House. And that took me 7 years to write. And actually, when I finished it, I was just writing it just because I love to write, and it was my thing. And I was reading it to my mother and my daughters, and that was about it. And I never told anybody that I was a writer because I just didn't feel like I was justified in saying that. I thought you have to be one of those best-selling authors to say you're a writer. But then when I finally finished the book, I thought, okay, now what? You know, I've got this thing. And my mother was an artist, and she painted, and she ended up joining a gallery and sold paintings, but her paintings were there for everybody to see. And I felt like I've written this book and nobody's going to see it, not even my family. So that's what got me started in figuring out what to do. And I thought, all right, I want to see if somebody else thinks I'm good enough to even go any further with this. So I sent my book off to an editor in New York just to take a look at it. And they were so blown away by it that they actually called several agents to try to get me an agent to. And at the time, I was such a novice in knowing what the publishing world was like, and I didn't even know how big that step was. But and then it took several years later for me to figure out, with a lot of rejection letters and different things, that okay, there is the indie world out there, and I'm going to go that route, because by that time I was in my 50s, and I thought, you know, I want to get this out there and see what I can do. So I did, and it's done really well, and finally got me started in doing it. But I still feel like, I mean, one of the things I love about now having the book published is being able to hear from other people and how the book has affected them and things. But I still write just because I absolutely love to write, and I don't think I could not write. So,
Well, you're probably like the rest of us. If we don't write, we go crazy to keep from going insane because the voices in our head won't shut up.
That is so true. You've got that right. I said, right, being a writer is almost being schizophrenic because you become so many different people, and they're always in your head, and you got to get it down on paper, and if you don't, you're going to go crazy. So,
do you hold conversations with your characters?
Oh yeah, oh yes. I mean, and I sometimes basically become like the character that I'm working on. I can see myself throughout the day doing things that they would be doing, and yes, and I dream about them. I mean, it's like stepping into another world, and that's what I love it. I mean, that's what I loved when I was a kid, doing that kind of thing, and now, you know, I get to do it as an adult, and it's a lot of fun.
And people don't say, stop, you have to grow up, because we don't have to grow up, Catherine. We are fine just where we are.
Exactly. Yes, yes. I love it. I have a thing on my wall that says, believe and make believe. I mean, that's my motto of just, I think you always have to keep the kid inside you.
Absolutely. Well,
yeah.
You brought up something about moving to the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and in my research, I found out that you are seventh generation Wash, and I'm probably going to slaughter it, but she's a seventh generation Washingtonian. Now,
yes.
when you moved from Washington, which is bustle and city and lights and busy and people, and you cross the Chesapeake Bay to, of all things, my second love, a horse farm.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like that you had sort of stepped into another world?
Absolutely. Yes, it was a bit of a culture shock when I first moved over there. And I was very hesitant to begin with. It was my husband really that was the driving force in having us move over there. And it took a while to get used to it, but I fell in love with it so quickly, of just the charm, the uniqueness. It's like stepping back in time almost. I mean, it's building up some now, but there's still pockets of you're really in another era. And I loved that. And I still worked on the other side of the bridge. And every day driving back over that bridge, it was like you could just exhale and just feel like, okay, everything slows back down. I'm back where I want to be. So, you know, I mean, granted, you have to give up some things that the city life has, but I really don't miss it at all.
Well, when you think about it, with the way that the voices in your head like to play, that was probably the perfect fodder for your stories, because I also read somewhere that you have talked to people, and of course you and I talked before we went live. This is one of my favorite subjects because I have a few in my life that ghosts abound over there in abundance.
Oh yes. I mean, it is the Eastern Shore is so rich in history. I mean, it backs so far for this country. I mean, it's got the county that I live in is one of the oldest continuous working courthouses in the country. And there's just so many. There's this one place, Point Lookout, which is a lighthouse that's on the Chesapeake Bay that is haunted. And it's not just one or two people. This has had documented numerous cases for years going way back. And it's just incredible. It used to be, it was used during the Civil War as a hospital, and they said that after that is when people started seeing people in there and hearing things, and still to this day, it's got that reputation, and it's just really fascinating. But, I mean, there's houses. I mean, they have ghost tours in Easton and different places. It's just wherever you go, there's some story that goes along with it, and it's really interesting. In fact, one of the things that got me inspired to write Haverford House was really good friends of ours that we go riding with. They have a house a little north of where we live on the shore, and it's been in their family since the 1600s. And it's this old farmhouse. It's been renovated some, but there's portions of it. They're still, you know, the way it was back then. And they said that when certain guests spend the night in that house, this man appears at the foot of the bed of the guest room, and he's dressed in a Civil War outfit. And these different people, without knowing the previous people seen this, have described this guy to a T, and they have a picture of the guy that is a friend of ours. His great uncle was in the Civil War, and it's him to a T. And they don't let anybody see the picture. They keep the picture hidden away because they don't want to influence it. But it is. So I spent the night there one night, and I'm telling you, I didn't sleep real well. I kept waiting, but I didn't get to see anything. But I just found that story so fascinating because these are all normal people. I mean, a lot of times people think, okay, you know, this is a little weird. Somebody's just imagining this, but there's been so many accounts of it. I thought, okay, there's something to this.
Well, you have to be open to the ability and the openness, and you are, to invite them, because if you're not, people, they get discounted, and sometimes they won't come back. When we went to venue, we went to Gettysburg, and I love that place. It's so sad, but I love that place. And we took the driving tour. I had the CDs, and we were going through, and I would get out and take pictures, and I would get back in the car, and I told my husband, I said, I feel the sadness in this place. It drapes itself over me like an old wet cloak. And every time I get out of the car, I feel this, it's real. I mean, it almost weighed me down. And I says, because the souls that are still here that died on this battlefield are not at peace, because they know they were killing their brothers and their cousins and their uncles and their fathers and their friends. And you feel that conflict at Gettysburg.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of the history of the shore is as well, on the, with the Civil War, and it's incredible. And like you said, brothers and brothers, sometimes in families, you know, getting split apart, and it was a brutal war. And I think those people don't rest.
Because they were drawn into something, each side believed in the dynamic of their belief, but they really didn't want to kill each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
There's another ghost that you talk about, a Miss Sarah at Poplar Hill Mansion. Tell us about her.
This is down in Salisbury, Maryland, is a little south of where we live. But she died, and the house burned down, and she was trapped in the house, and she died. And since then, people have seen her walking the grounds of the property, and there's a graveyard near there, and they've seen her, and they all describe the same look of what she's been. But there's another one that, I could go on and on with one, but there was one where there was a woman who wanted to marry this guy, and I can't remember their names, but her parents weren't going to allow it. And so she was going to elope, and she snuck out of the house and was riding her horse down the lane to go meet the guy that she was going to marry. And the horse bucked her off, and she hit her head on a rock and died. And so she never got to marry her. And she has never left that area. And the people that have the house now say that she walks the upstairs there all the time. They can hear her walking, and it's just crazy. I mean, it's really intriguing, these stories.
Well, it's amazing to me, because like I told you before we went live, I've lived with them all of my life. I have one that lives with me here. I had several that lived with me in my old house. In fact, there was one that became my grandson's guardian. And when my grandson moved out of my house and moved with his mother to their new house, she called me one time and she said, Mama, and I said, what? She says, Cherokee asked me if I saw this man, and I said, what did he look like? And she said that he was standing in the corner of the house, and Cherokee was 4 or 5 years old, kept saying, Mama, mm-hmm. do you see the man? And she said, what man, Cherokee? And he said, the man standing there. And she said, well, what does he look like? And he was dressed in late 1800s with the tails and the black hat and the long black, you know, the black pants and the black shoes, and he was tall. And I said, Brandy, that's Cherokee's guardian. He used to live here and left when Cherokee left. He went with Cherokee. I said, so don't discount him because he protects Cherokee.
Wow.
And we had seen him before. And wherever my grandson was, that's where he was.
That's amazing. That is really neat. Mm.
And so I don't, people said, well, aren't you afraid of ghosts? No, mm-hmm. the dead don't mm-hmm. scare me. It's the living that scares the daylights out of me sometimes.
And then, you know, and that sounds like one of the characters in Haverford House, the first book I wrote, and
the main character, Libby, they moved to this house that has been abandoned for years on the Eastern Shore, and it's an older home that was built back in the 1800s. But this woman, Tassie, who has some psychic abilities, and she guides Libby when she discovers there is a ghost in the house, and Libby's scared, and she's saying to Tassie that she's afraid, and she Tassie, the character, basically says the same thing. It's, you know, you don't have to be afraid. It's the people that there's more people alive that you need to be afraid of than you do of the ghosts, and the fact that people are so hesitant to believe it, and it's like they can believe other things, but yet they won't, just because it's never happened to them specifically. They find it very hard to accept and believe. But I think, like you said, if you're just open to it, it can happen. You know, it's out. I feel the spirits are out there. I know when my mother passed away, and I was very broken up about it and really upset. And I was having a hard time dealing with it. And then one night I was kind of in a semi-conscious, half awake, half asleep state. And I heard her voice. I mean, it was like it was right beside me, beside the bed. And she just said my name. She's like, Kathy. And it was like I could feel her wrapping her arms around me. And she said, I'm okay. I'm okay. And then it was gone. And I thought, I woke up and it's never left me, that feeling. And I knew she was really reaching out to me to let me know not to worry, that she was good.
And
it was incredible.
And what scares people, Kathy, what scares people is that very thing of the unexpectedness of hearing their name or feeling something brush up against them or a sensation of not being the only person in a room. And it's because they can't explain it. They can't see it, feel it, taste it, or touch
mm-hmm.
it. They discount it or they become afraid of it. And
right, yeah.
I have come to believe that when there are spirits still here, when there are ghosts here, they're here for a reason. And
mm-hmm.
it's because they have unfinished business or they're trying to protect someone. Or
right.
in your mother's
yes.
case, let you know it's okay. I'm okay,
right.
so I need for you to be okay.
Exactly, yes. And that's, yeah, in Haverford House with the ghost, there is something that this ghost is trying to get Libby to help her with, and it takes her a while to finally let go and realize, okay, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm just going to follow and see where they're leading me. And so that's the main plot of the book is what this mystery is that she's trying to unravel. But, I just think it's all fascinating.
When you wrote Haverford House, was mm-hmm. it due to the fact that you had already been exposed to these stories after you moved to the eastern side of Maryland, or had that story
yes.
been cooking for a while?
No, I mean, I that definitely had something to do with it. It was the friend we had gone riding with, and when he told us about his uncle, and that kind of got me started. But that element had always intrigued me. I have always been fascinated with just the paranormal to a degree. You know, it's like like you were saying about empaths and clairsentience and clairprescience and, you know, clairvoyance and just all of it. And I've come across different people that have those abilities, and it just fascinates me and intrigues me. And so that's what got me to write the story. And just the setting of the shore leads to that. I mean, if you've ever been to the Eastern Shore, and if you haven't, you should go, because the Chesapeake Bay is such a unique area, and it just has a very mystical quality about it, and it just lends itself to that kind of thing. So I was really inspired by the people that I met over there and the stories that I'd heard to write that book. Yeah,
the Chesapeake Bay is like New Orleans, mm-hmm, in that it has a heartbeat. It's like Key West. Key West has its own heartbeat. I've been to the Chesapeake Bay, and I'm going to tell you, I could have stayed there. I was there for a conference, and I loved it. I loved the oldness of it, the history of it, the spirits that walked among us when we were walking through the older part and visiting the historic places. I could have just stayed there and been happy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. It is a very unique place. I mean, to think that it's not that far from D.C. and Baltimore, but yet it's kept its character, and I hope it never goes away. I hope that it stays, and I think it will, because I think the people that do live there know what they have, and they're not going to let it be taken away. I mean, there's a big group of people that are for keeping it. Don't let it become urban sprawl or something, you know, keep it the way it is. So
keep the historic value of it. And on top of that, they got the best damn blue crabs I've ever put in my mouth.
Oh my gosh, yes, yes. Nothing better than
ladies and gentlemen, if you've eaten crabs, you have not eaten crabs until you go to, and you have to go to the Chesapeake Bay and eat the Maryland blue crabs, because there is nothing.
There is nothing like it. Yes. In fact, I remember back in the 70s, there was a show. I don't know anybody that's older can remember, called The Galloping Gourmet.
Yes.
And the guy was Graham Kerr, was a chef, and I got his book. I was into cooking at the time, and I got in his book, and he wrote there that he said he traveled the world. And he said he could have lived anywhere in the world, and he was trying to find the perfect place to live for his food and all that stuff. And he settled on the Eastern Shore, on the Chesapeake Bay. He said the abundance of seafood and just everything, he said it was like the perfect place to be, and it's so true. I mean, you don't get crabs anywhere else like that. I know there's other places that have crabs, but not like in the Chesapeake Bay.
No. You put them in you crack them open and you dip them in drawn butter and you just pop them in your mouth. And ladies and gentlemen, as the drawn butter is running down your arm and through your fingers and into your sleeve of your shirt, you put it in your mouth and it just melts. And you just, nobody talked to me that night while I was eating, because I just looked at them like, leave me alone. Let me have my own space here.
Yeah.
Let me have this moment.
Yes, it's ecstasy.
That's a good, well, I was going to say something else, but children, I think, sometimes listen to this show, and I didn't want to. Their parents have to explain to me that word.
I know what you mean. No, it is. It's heaven.
Burst of flavors, and then the butter runs down your mouth and down your chin and down your arms, and you're licking your arms and wiping your mouth. And yeah, ladies and gentlemen, go to Maryland, go to Chesapeake, but respect the history of the city, because it is phenomenal when you go up there. Now, let's talk about, you did Haverford House. and you started mm-hmm. this series, and then you went and did Belgrove. Tell me about
yes.
Belgrove.
Now, Belgrove is it's a little different. It's got the main character, Libby, who was in the first book, but it centers around three women, and one of them is she's basically been raised by her aunt. Her mother died when she was only three, and she never knew who her father was. And she's a young girl. She's only 17, but she's working for Libby's best friend in this herb shop. And Cassie Jackson is the woman who is the oldest living resident of the town. She's in her 100s. She won't tell anybody how old she is, but she's been there forever. And she's got these psychic abilities, plus her grandmother, medicine woman, a healing herbal woman way back, and she's learned all the stuff from her grandmother. So they've opened up this herb shop, and this girl, the young girl, Tabs is her name, Tabitha, she works with Julie, and she befriends Libby, and Libby, she wants to find out who her father is. So Libby, who has a very curious nature, I call her like an adult Nancy Drew, she just always is looking for something fun to get into, so she decides to help Tabs on her quest to find her father. But along the way, some different things happen. And when they're not getting anywhere with it, Cassie decides, she suggests they have a seance to try to ask her mother who the father is. So, but during that seance, Libby finds out that she also has these psychic abilities that Cassie has. But she fights it tooth and nail in the beginning. She doesn't want to believe it, but then she ends up opening up to it. And then the book kind of takes off from there as some different things happen. There's a murder involved and stuff, but it's all centered around the same town, and there's some new characters that weren't in Haverford House. But I wrote the books in that you really don't have to read one to read the other. They are sequentially in time, but I made it so that it's not like you wouldn't understand what was going on if you read the second one first or whatever. So,
I'm hoping to
do a third. Yeah. The funny thing is when I wrote Haverford House, I mean, it was just a book that an inspiration that came to me, and I wrote it and didn't know where I was going with it. And then after I wrote it, I got so much feedback and doing book clubs and just people writing to me and posting things on my website and hoping that there was going to be another one. And so I thought, okay, you know, maybe there could be another one. And so then I did Belgrove, and I really loved it because I love being in that town. I feel like I know the town and know all the people. So it was like fun being back there with everybody. And then when I finished this, people have been asking, you know, is there going to be a third? I'm thinking, I've just got it preliminary stuff down right now because I actually am finishing up another book that's totally different genre, but of maybe centering this third book around Cassie. She's a unique character, and I've had so many of my fans that have written to me love Cassie, and they want more of Cassie. So I was thinking of maybe going back in time and the early 1900s and centering around Cassie when she was young and going forward. You know, I haven't really laid it all out yet how I'm going to do it, but I thought that would be fun, you know, to add some history into it. And
that would be fun, especially if her mother was a healer, because when you get into the time period of Tashi's mother, my mind was going ding, 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 because healers were also known as witches.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So yeah,
here you go.
I definitely, going to work on that. And so it's probably going to take a while because I would like to do a lot more research on the history of the area, which I did some in Haverford House because that kind of goes back a little bit on the history of that house. But but I'm excited to get back into it once I finish this other project I'm working on. So, see where it goes.
Well, now you said Haverford House was based on your friend's house, correct? Or did I?
That's what got me the inspiration for it. Yeah, yeah.
When you named it Haverford House, does it? And this is simply because I'm a curious nature. Did you take some mm-hmm. of the uniqueness from your friend's historical house and put into the book?
Well, this is very ironic, and this is funny because I had this vision of this house in my head, and it wasn't my friend's house at all. That got me the inspiration to do something about a ghost in a house. But I had this vision of a house, and so I knew what the house looked like. I knew the setting of where the house was, and so I wrote the book. Then the book got published, and then it was maybe a year after the book was out, my sister-in-law, who lived in D.C., had a friend who lived in that. She lived in a condo in D.C., and she had a friend that lived there as well, and she said that she found out that the friend also had a house on the Eastern Shore. And so I went to D.C. and met this woman, and we had lunch together and everything, and she's like, well, you're going to have to come to my house on the shore sometime, you know, when I'm over there. And so I said, okay. So she lives part of her time in D.C. and part on the shore. Well, she invited me to her house, and I'm going back down this road. I'd never been to this part of the area, and I'm coming down this lane, and I turn the corner, and I'm telling you, the hair on the back of my neck, I had chills up my back. It was the house in my book.
Really?
And, I mean, I've got chills telling you right now. It was just so strange. When I got up to the house, and I had my book with me because I wanted to show her my book, and so I gave her a copy of the book, and I told her, I said, oh, my God, and there's a picture of the house on the cover of the book. And so she's looking at it. And so then she read the book and she said she couldn't even sleep one night because she started thinking her house was going to be haunted. It was scaring her so badly reading the book. But it was so bizarre. I thought I'd never seen this house before. And then I meet this woman through a strange way of my sister-in-law in D.C. I mean, it was just very bizarre. And then that was the house. It just is crazy. I don't know how that happened.
Get back to that thing of being an empath and clairvoyant. Somewhere, at some point in time, consciously or unconsciously, in this life or another life, you saw that house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I
think you're right. Yeah.
And that memory stayed with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because when I turned that, that feeling of like, oh my gosh, this is it. I'm here. I've seen this before, you know, but I had never been there. So it was very,
but you might
very
have
strange.
Been in a, you might have in another life because,
yeah,
I've been in situations or had conversations where I've said out loud, I've done this before. I remember
mm-hmm.
doing this, but there's
mm-hmm.
no way that I did it in this lifetime because it was the first time I'd ever met this person
mm-hmm.
or done this particular
yeah.
action. So, yeah, I am a firm believer that things happen that we've done before and that memory stays with us through
yeah.
however many
yeah.
lifetimes we have.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think there's so many people that have had encounters of a sort in different little ways. And I've put this in the book, in the Bell Grove book. There's a conversation that Libby is having with her husband, but there's times where I feel like everybody's had these odd little things happen and they're unexplainable. So they just either ignore it or put it out of their mind or try to find some rational way to explain it because it's too hard to think of anything else and they just discount it. But like one day my daughter and I were sitting on my porch and I had my leg up on the table resting and we were both sitting there talking and we were talking about something. Her dog had died and we were both very upset and we were talking about it. And then we all of a sudden were talking about my mother. And while I'm talking, my leg starts shaking and I'm looking at it, I thought, what is this? And so I put my hand on the table and the table's shaking. And so then I looked at my daughter like, are you seeing this? And so then she held the table and I thought, okay, maybe there's something making something shake in here. And so I felt the chair. The chair wasn't moving. I went across and there was a coffee table out on the porch that wasn't moving. Went back to the table that we were sitting at and only the table was shaking. And it lasted for 5 minutes and then it stopped. And so the two of us are both like, what was that? You know, what was that? And so then Chrissy's like, what were we talking about when that happened? I said, we were talking about grandma, and both of us are looking. We're like, no, could it be? But it's like you want to just try to find some other excuse. No, it had to have been something else. It had to be this. But it was just so bizarre that just this table moved and nothing else, you know, and just little things like that I feel if you keep your mind open to it, you know, you may see some more.
And my, this happens to my daughter all the time. We lost our my 13-year-old granddaughter 2 years ago. And things disappear and reappear. Things get moved. Doors open and shut. You hear footsteps in the house. There was something that Brandy had, and she had put it in a certain place, and she went to get it, and it wasn't there. And then several days later, she went back, and it was there.
Yeah, yeah.
So we know it's Ramonda telling everybody that, okay, I'm still here. I'm not done yet, but I want to let y'all know I'm okay. And just little things that you would say, okay, I misplaced it or somebody else moved it. Well, yeah, they did, but it wasn't someone of this world. It was someone of another world. And she was a big jokester. She liked nothing better than to play jokes on people. And she would, doors open, doors close. Brandy would hear footsteps and nobody was in the house but her. And the and the sugar gliders, and they're in their cage. And just strange things were happening around the house that she couldn't figure out. It's just Ramonda, don't worry about it. she's not going to hurt you. Yeah. She's just letting you know she's still there and y'all need to stop, put your grief in a box right now and start living again because she would want you to. And that's what your mom was doing when she was shaking that table. She was saying, I'm still here and I'm still paying attention and y'all are going to be okay.
No, I do agree with that.
And no, ladies and gentlemen, we are not crazy. I've had too many experiences in my life to discount not believing in something. When I wrote my first true crime, Silent Scream, it was about Florida's first serial killer. And for 8 months, I researched and worked on the book. And I finally got to go to sleep because I couldn't sleep. And I had just fallen asleep. And like you, in a semi, almost asleep state. And all of a sudden, this voice says, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, my.
I said, no, you're not. You're dead. Go away. And it was the killer. It was the serial killer.
Wow.
Because he was so used to intimidating people, he thought he could intimidate me from the grave, but he ran across the wrong woman to intimidate.
That's pretty good.
on your farm, let's talk about your horse farm, because I had horses for a while and I loved them. What kind of horses do y'all have?
Quarter horses. And I have been obsessed with horses since I was, before I could walk and talk. And when I was about four, my father, who was a big jokester and a big teaser, told me that a friend of his, and both of my parents were horse people, but we didn't, by the time they got married and had kids, they didn't have horses. And but they knew how much I loved horses. And so my father told me that some friends of his had a horse farm and that I could go live with them, but the only on one condition, that I wouldn't see my parents again. And they thought, and I was like, okay, I'm ready. I went in my bedroom and I packed my bag. And then when I found out he was just teasing me, I got so upset. But I mean, that's how much I love, like, okay, I'm out of here, guys. As long as I can go live on this horse farm. But then finally, when I was 13, I got a horse and we boarded it because we didn't have a place to keep it. And it had always been my dream of having a horse in my backyard. In fact, my mother one Christmas had given me this, it was a German horse that just a toy, but it was about 12 inches high and it had real horsehair tail and mane and had glass eyes. And I just loved it. I mean, I was obsessed with this horse and I would dream every night that this horse was real, and then I'd wake up in the morning thinking it was real, and then I'd see the horse across the room sitting on my dresser. But so that was the one thing I'd always wanted my whole life, and I never thought I'd actually have a horse on my property or whatever. And so my husband and I, because we were living in the city still, and I had three kids, and you know, everything was fine. And then he got this notion that he is into boats a lot, and so he wanted to get over to the shore and closer to the water and everything. So he found this piece of property, and it was 5 acres we started out with, and I said, well, the only way I'm moving over there, because I really did not want to go from the other side, and I said, the only way I'm going over there is if I can have a horse. And I really didn't think he would say it. And he's like, okay, fine. So I thought, whoa, you know, you got to be careful what you would. Now I'm thinking, now what do? I'm working full time. I've got 3 kids, and now I'm going to have a horse to boot. So I got the horse, and it had been probably 10 years since I'd ridden, and but got back into it and actually got him into it. So he ended up getting a horse too. And
wow.
Then we got a couple more horses, and then we thought, okay, we need a bigger piece of property. So now we found a friend of ours who was a farmer, had his eye out on this place that was going up for auction. And so we got 100 acres now and have the horses. And I'm just living my dream there. I love it. And so now I've got grandchildren that come out and ride the horses as well. So it's a lot of fun.
To see, ladies and gentlemen, Kathy's dream came true too. And y'all know I'm a big proponent of putting your dreams out there in the universe, because they do happen. We sometimes have to wait for them, but they do happen. And like Kathy said, mm-hmm. be careful what you wish for when you have a husband that's ready to negotiate a deal.
Exactly. I was not expecting that.
I love it. Did you after you picked yourself up out of the floor when he said,
yeah.
Okay, then you went horse shopping, right?
Exactly. I went right out. When the first horse I have, he passed away now, but it was a Morgan, and beautiful horse. And it was a lot of work. I mean, but it's a labor of love. I mean, I love horses so much, but I was adding another chore into my life at the time, working full time, 3 kids that you're driving around everywhere, and now I'm taking care of a horse as well. And it's like, okay, what was I thinking here? But but it got the children involved. My son got into it. He helped me clean out the stalls and all that stuff. So, I mean, it really, I'm glad we did it now. Really, my husband has been the impetus on a lot of things, because if it wasn't for him, I'd still be living over in the city and not have gotten another horse again. So I got to give him
credit for that. And you might not have published your books either.
Yes, you know, I may not. Yeah, I probably would not have got. I know I wouldn't have gotten the inspiration for Haverford House and then, you know, wrote Belle Grove after that. So I think exactly what you said. Put your dreams out there. Years ago, I was probably in my early 30s. It was big. It was around the time of all the shops with the crystals and that stuff. And I really got into that stuff. And my sister-in-law and I would read these books. And this one was saying that you start this dream journal and you put down everything that you want to have happen as if it's happened. And you write about mm-hmm. it as if it's happening. And I did that. And I put it in this book, and I'd write every day in the book and just different things. And then life gets busy and stuff, and then the book got put away and didn't really even think about it. And years went by, and it wasn't until we had moved to the farm and I was moving things around and I was straightening my bedroom up one time, and I came across this book, and I thought, oh, yeah, it was like one of those little journal book type things. And I opened it up, and I'd say 95% of the things that I had written in there had come true, and it was just amazing when I'm going back and reading it. And I thought, whoa. And I didn't, it wasn't like I had that book every day looking at it like, okay, I hope this dream comes true now. It's like I wrote it and then I put it away and forgot about it. And, but it happened. I put it out there in the universe and I think it happened.
And it happens. And this is what people tend to forget, because they get so caught up in the everyday, the drudgery of making a living and doing this and doing that. They forget to dream. And that is so
mm-hmm.
sad, because dreams is why we have the world that we live in today.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And you're not going to believe this, but we are almost at the end of our hour.
No, you're kidding. It should go by fast.
Yeah, I told Kathy before the show, I said the hour will go by fast. And she was worried about not having enough to talk about for an hour, ladies and gentlemen, but we hadn't even covered everything. So she said she'll come back in after the first of the year because she's got a new book coming out, and we're going to save that new book for when we bring her back. But, Kathy, tell the folks where you can be found so that they can connect with you.
Yes. Well, my website's www.katherinewingfield.com, and on the website has all the information about where they can get the books and stuff about me and everything. So, that would be the best way. I'm also on Facebook, Katherine Kessler Winfield, and then my books are available on Amazon and Kindle as well.
And ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you. I am adding her to my reading list. My reading list is so long now, it will probably be Armageddon before I get through reading everything that I need to read. But know that like Kathy, that's why I play the song that I played tonight, because not only did my dreams get stomped and ripped apart and torn down and thrown back in my face, and I was told no, they literally got stolen without my permission. So I encourage each and every one of you, if you have a dream, don't allow anyone to steal it. Don't give them permission, because that is your dream, and it's yours to own. And whether you choose to make it come true or not, that is entirely up to you. And Kathy, don't hang up when the show goes offline, because I got some things for you. But before we do run out of time, I want to say thank you so, so much for finding me and spending an hour with me and agreeing to come back, because I think we just scratched the surface of the things we have in common to talk about and our love of the paranormal and history and horses and books and who knows what else is out there.
Yes, I have enjoyed it thoroughly, and I would love to come back. Yes.
Wonderful. So I will add you to the list of folks that I am bringing back after the first of the year, and you will get a following here. I promise you that. People will go, when are you having Kathy back? Okay.
All right.
Pencil her in. People, I promise. I'll pencil her in. Don't get excited. Now, on Wednesday night, my guest Wednesday night is a gentleman named Garrett. He is with Hanging with Webb. He has a video vlog that he does, and I met him at an event I did in Cocoa Beach at the International Palms. So he will be my guest on Wednesday night. And I can't remember my other two guests on Thursday and Friday night because I had a brain cramp, and sometimes that happens. Y'all know me. I've known me long enough to know that when it gets dark and I've had no sleep, that the brain goes to sleep. It's just one of those things that I do. It's one of my many flaws, but that's okay. So join us on Wednesday night and Thursday night and Friday night. Saturday night I will be taking off because that is, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, we will be going into July. And the first Wednesday in July, I will do the anniversary show, even though the show will not be a year old until the 27th. But I want to start the anniversary of our show off at the first of the month. So stay tuned for that. Now, remember what I say, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, no one can steal your dream without your permission. Number two, if you want to be successful, stop asking permission. Just go out and do it. And number three, stop feeling special. Be special, because each and every one of you are. And in closing, y'all always know that I say this because I believe it with all of my heart. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. How you leave others feeling after having an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, that does become your trademark. I've seen it happen over and over and over again. And you never know, ladies and gentlemen, you never know whether or not you might save a life just by being kind and a smile. Because everyone has a journey to travel, and sometimes that journey is not very pleasant. So no matter how bad your day is, I guarantee you their day might be a little bit worse. So be kind, be gentle, and smile, and that will be your trademark. So until Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, this is Yvonne Mason with my guest, Kathy Winfield, and we are off the chain, and good night. We are now off the air, Kathy, but anything we say is going to go up in archives, so I'm going to be real quick and let you know that when we hang up, the show's going to go up into archives. Once it archives, I'm going to post the link on my page and tag you in it. My gift to you, my dear new friend, is you take that and you release it out into the universe. It gets better.
Okay.
Tomorrow, I will upload it to podcast.com, Podcast Garden, if they're back up. They were down today. Mixcloud, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. I will put those links up on my page and tag you in them. That is also my gift to you. The show is heard around the world. I'm not kidding when I say we're heard in over 67 countries. And the reason we're heard in over 67 countries is because of those five podcasts, plus iTunes, YouTube, FM.com, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher, which is heard on Sirius Radio. You're getting all kinds of wonderful, wonderful exposure. And I want you to take this link and put them everywhere and tell their friends.
Definitely.
And listen to your debut show, which you did a marvelous job.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It was very enjoyable. You're a very pleasant person to talk to and made me feel very comfortable. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, that makes me feel really humbled because I've done so many interviews over the years as being the one interviewed that I always want to make my guests feel like we're just sitting down with a cup of coffee and getting to know each other.
Mm-hmm. And that's how it was. I felt very comfortable. Yes, it was great. So
good.
Thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing the links when they're up.
They will be. And I look forward to having you come back because I know we'll have more stories to tell.
Yes. I look forward to that as well. Thank you.
You're welcome, darling. So until we talk again, I will say thank you again and go enjoy the rest of your evening.
All right. Thank you. You too.
All right.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye.